Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, this is James of the Cinematic Universe podcast. Just before you start, I want to let our listeners on the free feed know that if 2 hours of awards isn't enough for you, then we've uploaded part two of this recording over on the Patreon, which is an extra hour-long episode where we're doing a full preview of everything that's coming out in 2023. That's available now at patreon.com/cinematicuniverse for $3 a month or whatever the local equivalent is. I'll remind you again at the end of the episode, but for now you can enjoy the 2022 award show. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to what passes for the 2022 Cuppies. I'm your host Joe Cunningham, and joining me are
James Hunt
and Rhys Williamson.
So, the podcast has changed a bit in the past year. we're now predominantly on Patreon. We are just doing the new releases and the Disney Plus shows. And so it's made doing like a comprehensive Cuppies a little bit difficult. So what we're going to do is we are going to roll this show into a kind of 2022 review with a bit of an ad hoc Cuppies thrown in the middle as well. You know, we'll go through the categories. We'll see if there is anything that stands out as being worthy for these categories based on the things we've seen and talked about in the past year. We might have some categories that don't have winners. You know, right now I don't know if there's a Howard T. Duck Award winner. We'll soon find out.
I have a feeling there might be, but
oh, I'm excited. So yeah, we'll start off with a bit of a preview of last year. A review of last year. And then a preview of next year with some Cuppies in the middle. So, guys, we did, James and I, on the Patreon last year, start of January, don't know where Rhys was, we did a preview of 2022. I think this was the episode before you guys read through a magazine.
That was a good one.
Yeah. That was an iconic episode, yeah.
It was almost as good as the one we read out the Oscar nomination.
We're doing that again this year. If I've got to do it alone, I will. It's happening.
I'm looking forward to that week off. Oh. So when James and I previewed 2022, there were 10 movies due for release. We got 7 of them. The Flash and Shazam 2 moved back, as did Across the Spider-Verse. So we thought those were going to be released in 2022 at the start of the year. They weren't. So we finished up with 7 movies. We, at the time, James and I kind of predicted, you know, like, what were we kind of said, how highly we anticipated each of those movies, you know, how much we expected to like them, and also predicted the box office. And so what I thought was, if we go through now, We've now got 7. Rhys, obviously, we don't have any comparison point for you. But maybe you can sprinkle in whether you were excited for these movies or not as we go through. And yeah, we'll see whether our predictions lined up with reality. So what we did last time was we go one at a time. If any of us has a movie higher in their list, we'll save to talk about it when we get to the higher spot. So we'll go James, Rhys, Joe, and then if anyone has anything, you know, higher or lower than a given spot.
Okay.
We'll figure out as we go. So, Rhys, what do you have as your bottom movie?
I've got the stinky, stinky poo film Thor. that's the bottom of my list. Is that the bottom of everyone else's list?
Not by a long shot.
Okay, no, it's not. It's not the bottom of mine either. So, James, what have you got bottom of yours?
So with the caveat that I never saw DC League of Super Pets, the bottom of mine is Morbius.
Okay, so I think, but yeah, well, how do we work this? Let's say DC for the League of Super Pets for the purposes of this list is your seven. Then that makes Morbius your six, I guess. Mm-hmm. Morbius is my seven. It's my bottom ranked. Reese, what do you have at number six?
No, Morbius is my six.
Okay, so we can talk about Morbius. So we all agree it's pretty bad, and I'm fairly sure that Reese has bumped that all the way up to six because of what your 3-star rating on Letterboxd was. It.
Listen,
didn't you rate it higher than Batman? The Batman, I can't remember.
State of my Letterboxd, it just captures a moment in time. A lot of, you know, I have no regrets, but you know, you in the cold light of you know, January the 3rd at 8:59. One has to make one's choices in that moment. And so Morbius comes in at a hot number six over their little poo, stinky poo. bad, yes. Bad, poor, not good, and rubbish. And yeah. And
We expected Morbius to be bad. But James and I had it as our like... Oh, I think we both had it sixth because we thought that DC's League of Super Pets was kind of just, you know, I think it was kind of like a throw that on the end because who knows. But yeah. We expected Morbius to be bad. Although I don't think we expected it to be quite as incompetent as it was plotting-wise and...
acting-wise.
Well, and I was listening back to our preview episode to get this info, and we were like saying... Like, and what do you think? Because in the trailer, they've got this Spider-Man stuff. So is it going to be in the MCU? How is Michael Keaton just going to be in it? Or is he going to be tagged on at the end? And I think even, you know, when we were talking about the possibility of him being tagged on at the end, we didn't quite grasp how tagged on at the end.
We didn't grasp the ineptitude of that post-credit scene. Yeah.
I think Morbius was, I think there was a lot of bad movies this year. But I Morbius ended up bottom of my list just because it barely felt like a movie. at least the others felt like they existed. Morbius was just instantly a joke.
the thing about the Morbius is like it isn't even like Venom where there's a kind of camp hilarity to it. It's just bad and dull and confusing and. You can only enjoy it in retrospect when you think, like, oh, why did that happen? None of that made sense, did it?
I mean, let's not forget that it did provide some good social media content.
Yeah, it's fair, yeah, that you could, if you wish...
Hashtag it's Morbin time.
I was going to say you could watch that movie in 2-minute chunks in a Twitter thread for a while.
Yes.
Which I believe is the way it was intended to be seen.
And that's Spinoza would have wanted.
Yeah.
Well, I think directed Morbius, maybe.
Wild some of the directors on this list. You know, I'd completely forgotten that Daniel Espinosa had directed that movie. And I mean, he might have done as well. let's not forget as well that Morbius got re-released this year. Because Sony mistook the trolling on social media for social engagement and re-released the movie so it flopped twice. I can't believe that's the thing that happened, but it did.
I could defend Morbius just for a minute.
You can try.
It's not really defense. It's just one thing in all of this little quiz that we did today, a thread throughout, for me at least, is, well, at least it's... There's something a bit different about it, some of this stuff that I'm okay with.
That's what I wrestled with. I was like, yes. Is it the worst?
Like we can come to. I mean, okay, so maybe Thor is much higher on somebody's list, but for me, Thor is worse because it's so much lazier. I think for me, it's so much lazier. Morbius is a poorly made, crappy film, but I don't know. It's a vampire guy, and it's Jared Leto being weird. That's not in any of the other
ones. In fairness, if you were going to choose outside of superheroes a genre that was more overrepresented than any other, you would immediately go to vampire movies, right?
I mean, you're right. God damn it, James, you got me there.
I guess what I come back to is, I think the final film that we saw was compromised, but, you know, we talked about, well, maybe, you know, that maybe this will be Jared Leto going bug nuts. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. And you go, well, like, what was the ambition? What did they think they were making? And I think, I don't know, I can't see at any point, you know, given that there isn't a Bugnuts performance at the center of it. Maybe there is with Matt Smith, but outside of Matt Smith, I don't know what the ambition was or what they thought they were doing that was different or interesting.
And inside of Matt Smith, it's too dark to see.
Indeed. Indeed. That'll be the day. That'll be the day when we can see inside of these these men and women that we adore such.
We've cut down a weird corridor. Okay, so that was mine, and that was your number. Mine and James's number 7. Reese's number 6. James, what was your number 6?
My number 6 was, I wrestled with this. It was Black Adam.
I wrestled with this as well, but I ultimately went Thor: Love and Thunder. So let's get to Reese's number 5.
Yeah, just my number 5.
Your number 5, we're zooming up the list.
Black Adam.
Okay. Yes. James, your number 5?
My number 5 was Love and Thunder.
Right, okay, let's talk about Love and Thunder. So that's interesting. It didn't get higher than 5 for any of us. Mm-hmm. So 5 for James, 6 for me, 7 for Reese. I had this 4 on my list of predictions, and James, you actually had it at 5. And listening back to our podcast, we were very worried that the Taika Waititi shtick had worn thin, and that we didn't like Jojo Rabbit. And
yep,
I sat there listening to it. I go in, like, oh, I really hope this wasn't confirmation bias, you know. But I still like that movie. When I think back on it, I just think about how paper thin and, like, just ultimately flimsy it felt. And especially, you know, since the movie where Chris Hemsworth has kind of, without, like, outright shitting on the movie, has made a few comments of, like, look, if I come back and do Thor again, it will have to be tonally different.
Yeah.
That feels about as pointed as a movie star could maybe be about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a big disappointment, even though it kind of didn't. I mean, it wasn't. Do you know what I was going to say? Even though it wasn't that low in our rankings, but I think considering some of the movies that I have above it, which I thought were terrible, like I think we got like 3 properly bad movies of these 7, and you know, a 4th one that's not far off. I think it's pretty damning to Thor: Love and Thunder. I have it. I was checking back my MCU rankings. It's dead bottom.
Wow, God. It's also sort of, it's like such a quick fall from grace. It's you know, the Ragnarok was it's not our, I don't think it's any of ours, but it's many people's, you know, top MCU film in the top leagues. It sort of reinvigorated the Thor side of things. Had the Hulk's in it. It's great fun. And then, you know, I know we had Jojo Rabbit in between and Taika's sort of, you know, outward personality, feeling like we got a lot of Taika. But, you know, it's literally the follow-up to that movie. And there, it's not like Taika makes an Avengers in between and so you've got more of that crap. It's just such a fall from that first, from the first film to the second. And it felt... I'm just not sure it needed to go that way. And I said this one on our review, but it feels like it was just so lazy. And actually, if he basically just gave a bit more of a shit, I think this could have been better. And it just all felt so first drafty. And you know, some of the way the plot gets from beat to beat is, again, it's just so the first idea he had, you know, day 3 of writing, he just went, oh, well, that's my idea. Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll do something like that. Not that, that's bad. Not that, we'll come up with something better. Not that, we'll do something better. And then And then he goes, "Right, I could write the script more today. But what I'm going to do instead is go to the beach, or go and, you know, pitch another 7 movies and sell 5 of them to different studios." It just felt like he wasn't there for it. Lazy. And the comedy was bad. You know, that's his big thing. And I thought the comedy was really, really poor.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know what else to say other than, yeah, it wasn't funny. I don't know, comedy's subjective, but I completely agree about it feeling first draft, and yeah, I'm just not sure what there is to say positive for it. I don't think that there were any like amazing performances or anyone that really stood out.
And such a waste of Natalie Portman, you know, in hindsight, what a burn then of that. You're going to do that. No, maybe not of her, but you're going to do that story, which is a great recent story that you had the pieces for. You know, you have Thor still around. You have Jane Foster still around in the universe. You really could do a really good version of that story. And it's such a whiff. It's such a whiff. And same with the Gore stuff. That's a really cool recent comic and a cool villain. It's just a proper, proper whiff. That's a shame, because now they're not going to do either of those again anytime soon. So there's a shame. Then it's also a shame if this is the last Thor movie, if this is the last time we see, it probably won't be the last time we see Hemsworth, right? That feels extremely, extremely unlikely. But, you know, it could be the last major, major role for him as Thor. You know, just age will sort of have an impact on
him. I don't think so. I think he could do this for another decade.
I was going to say, I think we're, at the very least, we're going to get like a sort of old Hemsworth doing, you know, King Thor or whatever.
I still wonder whether that's whether he leads that movie. But yeah, but in the rare scenario that this is the last Thor movie, what a shame then to go out on this one on a real fart. It's just a shame.
I don't know. I see Hemsworth sticking around for a long time. Just because, you know.
He's got nothing bigger going on.
Yeah, he seems happy to do it, and also I think Thor's one of the characters that lends itself to
time.
Well, and also that kind of buff, we see that, you know, older actors are able to maintain that kind of more steroidy, massive jacked look.
What okay. are you on about? I think The Rock is all natural.
Well, good news is we get to, I think we get to talk about another movie now that is down at the bottom of all of our lists, because my number 5 was Black Adam. And I think we've ticked that off for everyone, haven't we now?
Yes.
I really debated between Thor and Black Adam. I don't think there's much between them. I don't know whether this is more of a, like, you know, an expectations thing. Like, I had Black Adam at 5 in my predictions for the year and how excited I was for it. I wasn't hugely excited. By the time I saw it, the reaction had been kind of muted. And, I think of all of us, I hated it the most. I think it is a real piece of shit. But, I kind of think Thor was as well. So there they are down at 5 and 6. We talked about this recently, but is there anything more we want to say about Black Adam and it not being very good? And especially in the light of, he probably ain't coming back.
I do think that, like Morbius, it's hard not to look at Black Adam and think, well, this film was definitely compromised along the way. I don't know what the best version of it was, but I think whatever forces were acting on it ended up making it worse than it is. And I think The Rock's charisma goes a long way to making it watchable, which is why it's as high as it is. Like, I had a good time watching that movie just because The Rock smashing stuff up and, you know, chucking people across the sea is inherently amusing to me.
Yeah, I liked looking back at these 7 movies. It's only Thor that made me kind of angry, which is the bottom of my list. And I think I found things to enjoy in numbers 4, 5, and 6. We'll get to 4, but including Black Adam. And I sort of it was diverting, and the Rock is a movie star, and I know that sort of what's happened since colours some of that. Some of it you're like buying into, like, oh yeah, it's the Rock, he's a big movie star, and this is a big character. Obviously, it doesn't feel like the truth now. But I'd be lying if I said, I mean, I said it on the review we did, but it was just a total theft of a dozen other things from other superhero movies. But those dozen things are kind of good in other stuff, and they were okay in this, and then the Rock holds it all together.
This might be a good point to talk box office. I'd maybe dispute that the Rock is a movie star anymore. Like, do people care? Because here is the Rock in a superhero movie, which is, you know, the dominant genre, and people didn't turn up. Of these movies, it finished fifth. And, you know, there's a big... So the box office for these, Morbius took $167 million worldwide, Super Pets took $203 million, Black Adam, $391. And then we jumped to $760 million for Thor in fourth, $770 million for The Batman, $820 for Black Panther, and $955 for Doctor Strange. So, you know, kind of like half what the top four took. That's bad.
I feel like that's the gravimetric pull of the DC Extended Universe is just absolute tedium, though, right?
No, not if you look at, you know, previous releases. They've had big hits. Aquaman.
Aquaman made more than a bill.
Yeah. Wonder Woman 84 would be hard to judge because that was a pandemic movie.
The first one made a bill, didn't it?
I think it did. It did really well. Yeah. I can try and bring. I don't think it's anything DCEU. I think it's just, you know, people didn't want to see it. I didn't care about The Rock. James, do you want to know how we did in our predictions?
Go for it.
Okay, so box office wise, you had me on the bottom two, so you said Morbius 7, DC 6. I said DC League of Super Pets 6. I said it the other way around. So we were wrong there. Well, I was wrong, you were right. We both had Black Adam at 5.
Nice.
Smash that. We both had Thor Love and Thunder at 4.
Okay.
I had the Batman at 3, which it was. You had it at 2.
Okay.
Then number 2, you had Wakanda Forever. I had Doctor Strange, and then you had Doctor Strange at 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it at 2. So basically, the top 3 were a bit of a shuffle. But Doctor Strange is currently at $955 million worldwide, Black Panther at $820, and Black Panther's still going, so...
It won't get another 100 there yet.
I don't think it will, unless it's like, unless there are any like territories that it's not come out in yet. But yeah,
well, I guess if Bassett gets an Oscar nom, they might try and put it out there again.
And it's making like 10 mil a week at the US box office at the moment. So it might get up to around 900 maybe. Mm-hmm. Step down from the first film, certainly. But yeah, so that goes to say, I think this is a disaster for The Rock. it's, you know, going to be really interesting to see what he does next. Maybe he retreats back to his Netflix movies with Ryan Reynolds.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay, so Black Adam, fairly low down for all of us. So we've done our 7-6-5. So, Reese, what was your 4?
Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
James, what was your 4?
So I struggled with the choice here, but I went for Wakanda Forever.
Oh, wow. So have you had Doctor Strange yet? You haven't, have you?
No.
Okay, my number 4 was also Doctor Strange. Number 3, Reese, what have you got number 3?
DC's League of Super Pets.
Okay, I also have DC's League of Super Pets at number 3. So here's a chance to talk about that. Yeah. Listen, if it gave us one thing, it gave us Goodbye Podcast.
Yes.
Actually, on that preview episode, James, I asked you whether you would be going to the cinema with your daughter to see it. It turned out it was the other way around.
And I went alone.
I expected to go, but she went with her mum instead. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think this ended up being like a charming 3-star movie, comfortably the better of the two rock superhero movies this year. And like had some fun supporting characters. It was nice. It was, you know, it had a few fun superhero gags, some good voice performances. It was solid, and it also led to Reese. What was the joke that the Marc Maron gag that I had to explain to you coming off the back of it?
Was it Lock the Gates?
It was Lock the Gates.
Yes.
They make a Lock the Gates gag in the movie, which is brilliant. I really enjoyed that weird Marin in joke. But yeah, it's good, Reese, right? It's nice and pleasant. I think James would have it up around here as well if he'd seen it.
For me, the moment where I thought, oh, maybe this is actually good and sort of thoughtful is when it becomes clear that it's not just all of the pets. I mean, maybe this was obvious from the trailers. I didn't really watch the trailers. But when I guess I kind of thought it was going to be a kind of crappy superhero movie with pets standing in for the superheroes. But then actually, once you meet the sort of supporting characters and they're kind of original characters, I sort of wondered, oh, okay, maybe this is not the just kind of cookie cutter, you know, copy and paste crap that I thought it was going to be. And then you've got, you know, it's a voice cast full of great comedic performances. You know, great comedic performers. They're not all doing amazing fucking, you know, top tier of their career work. But, you know, Kate McKinnon is great. Kevin Hart's, you know, he's charming. Vanessa Bayer is good. I'm reading some of these off Wikipedia.
Natasha Lyonne was the standout for me, I think.
Yeah. And it's just sort of, it's a reminder that animated movies can be, as you say, a charming 3-star film. They can sort of get there with and make it look quite easy. And I also think it had some fun stuff to say about heroism and what it is to be a hero and all that kind of crap that, you know, I think it's in some ways it's harder to get into the very mature at this point superhero genre. You know, it's harder to do a origin story and to get at that kind of at those core tenets of heroism, because it just feels like we've seen those stories again and again and again and again. And somehow this one, I wasn't moved, right? No, but I just thought it told a inspirational, charming story, you know, with the lead of what it is to be a hero, and superhero movies as the wider genre could probably do with a little bit more of that, actually. A little bit more of that.
It's one thing I was about to say is that I find it interesting how kids' movies tend to be a lot saner than, like, I don't want to say adult movies because that's different, than, you know, all ages movies. Like, if it's aimed at kids, the story tends to be a bit tighter and the themes tend to be a lot clearer. And in some ways, that can be seen as simplistic. But also, when you watch something like Black Adam, you kind of crave a bit of that clarity.
Yes.
Let me bring the two of those things together. You were talking there about adult movies, James. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the. Is it Axel Braun who makes the superhero parodies? He had a tweet go viral. He was very angry about Henry Cavill not being Superman anymore. And was kind of like demanding that James Gunn, like, fire James Gunn, restore Henry Cavill. And I was like, that's weird.
That is weird, yeah.
But obviously, I think there's a job waiting for Henry should he want it. To still don the cape in some capacity. You might not get to keep it on for the whole movie.
Oh, boy.
Last word on DC League of Super Pets. It ended up at 3 for me because it was competent and there were 4 movies to one degree or another that I thought were not. So that's why it ended up at 3 and not higher or not lower. James, what was your number 3?
Well, so, okay, my number 3 was Wakanda Forever because I only got 6 in my list. So.
Oh, okay. So what was your number 4? Did we do that?
Yeah. But okay. Like I say, I only had 6 on my list. Okay. So when we've been counting backwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
So number 2 for you, Reese.
The Batman.
James, you're number two?
Doctor Strange.
Okay, so now it's time to talk about Doctor Strange.
Okay, yeah, so let's talk about Doctor Strange. So Doctor Strange at number two for you, James.
At number four for
me. At number four for Reese, and number four for me as well. To me, that's a damning indictment of this year in superhero movies.
I would agree with that. Because basically, my list has six movies, five of which I could take or leave. And Doctor Strange is one of those. Like, there were things about Doctor Strange that I found really interesting, and I haven't rewatched it lately, so I find it hard to articulate entirely what I enjoyed. But at the time, my memory is that it was doing a lot of weird stuff, and I was just kind of there for a film that was taking a lot of big swings, even if they weren't all landing.
So this is why it ends up above Morbius, Black Adam, Thor. I think the Sam Raimi of it all, Raimi is doing enough with the material on the page to elevate it. It has some nice sequences in there that I think are mostly, you know, director driven. Mostly, you know, a lot of the creepy stuff with Wanda and Zombie Strange and the music battle and all that kind of stuff. But then the flip side of that is, for me, a real waste of the setup from WandaVision and the betrayal of that character. And just, you know, from a basic plot point of view, I don't think it really holds up. You know, and certainly the way that they resolve it at the end. I think America Chavez is a big miss from giving her any character, for like making her anything more than a MacGuffin in the movie. And then the other thing that really stands out to me as just not being good enough is that whole cameo sequence in the middle. That again, like the good bits were Sam Raimi thinking, you know, having some fun with the way that he disposed of those heroes. But the whole sequence of just talking to Doctor Strange and talking through the alternate reality stuff, and then it just felt so perfunctory to me, and a film that just wasted so much potential. That it's the multiverse of madness. Where are we going? We're going to one other world where the traffic lights are a different color.
There are a couple of other worlds.
Not that they spend any significant time in.
It's everything everywhere all at once.
I'm right in saying, right, they flick through the worlds in that one sequence. They then go to the traffic light world, and then they go to like the destroyed world.
You're in two locations, you know, mostly. Yeah, 100%.
And isn't the world where Wanda has her children a different one again?
Oh, but that's just her house from WandaVision. That's not a...
It's a different universe.
Yeah, but to Joe's point, the movie's called The Multiverse of Madness, and, you know, there isn't much multiverse, and it's not particularly mad. So, you know, it's a bit of a failure off of those expectations. Not to mention the sort of Spider-Man follow-up piece of it. That's why the movie made so much money, because people saw that and went, "Oh, more of that!" And then they saw it and they went, "Oh, okay, that wasn't really more of that." And then all the WandaVision follow-up as well, which is probably the most egregious of a disappointment. And part of that is it's one of the natures of, you know, serialized storytelling with lots of creative people. You know, I bet you Feige didn't think WandaVision was going to be as good as it was.
I was going to say, I think if the film fails at anything, it's paying off WandaVision. And the fault there is that WandaVision was a lot better than it needed to be.
Well, the other failure of the film is a failure of the character of Doctor Strange in the MCU, which is just that he's just not that interesting. And it's not a particularly interesting performance.
There's that thing, isn't there, in there that's kind of set up of, you know, is there a place out there where he's happy? Is there a place where he's satisfied? And, you know, kind of turns up in the Silver Universe, and yeah, that Doctor Strange wasn't it, and actually, is he ever, you know, is he just, you know, kind of yearning for things that he could that have already gone that he can never have? The reason I'm kind of stumbling over that is because I think it's kind of like it's set up in the movie and not really delved into the way it should be. It's like this thematic hook that doesn't really follow all the way through the film, because I kind of feel like most of the film is as an excuse to have that set piece in the middle.
Mm.
A set piece that I just thought was so naff.
But also, you know, I think, yeah, the reason it's at four for me, even with all that crap, is that, just like Joe, you know, there's no sequence in a movie this year like the you know, the musical fight sequence, that the amount of invention and creativity there is. I would compare it, you know, maybe only to Avatar in terms of how some, you know, how the inventiveness on display in certain sequences, that the amount of passion from the filmmakers, you know, primarily Raimi. There just isn't any of that in fucking Blackadder or Morbius or DC's League of Super Pets. And there isn't really any of that in any of the Disney Plus shows. And there isn't any of that in lots of other blockbusters I've seen this year. So there are, it's at four on the strength of like half a dozen sequences. And that's saying a lot about the quality of those sequences. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. James, you had that as your most anticipated movie of the year, and I had it as my second, so that might play into, you know, mm-hmm. even for you who liked it more than Reese and I, it didn't hit the heights that you're expecting it to.
No, that's
okay, so that was your number two. My number two is Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. Have we all hit that now?
Wakanda was third for me.
No, it's a little bit higher for me. So okay. it's a little bit higher.
Okay, so maybe do we all have different number ones? Let's find out. Number one for Reese is
Black Panther.
Ah, okay, there we go. James, why did this not hit number one for you?
I think. Or why I was pretty it
number,
much...
number three is quite. So, what do you have it below?
Below Doctor Strange in the Batman.
Oh wow! So not even your top MCU.
No, I mean the thing for me is that. I think it didn't capture the things that were fun about the first Black Panther. And while I think it was a really well put together movie, I found it hard to enjoy it. And I think, again, my main criticism, and the one that I keep coming back to, is that I think if Ryan Coogler wants to make blockbuster movies, he has to do it with an eye on the audience. And I think I really respected that he made a movie about grief that was very morose. I think if he doesn't want to have fights that are cool, and if he doesn't want to introduce characters that you want to root for, I think don't make a blockbuster movie in a superhero universe. Like, do that on your own time.
What do you guys make of? Like, what sense do you get of like what foothold it has in the culture right now? Because the first movie was a phenomenon, right?
Yeah, and just went and went and went for months, years, and, even.
And I almost wonder whether, you know, there's people expressing surprise at how quickly Avatar has got to $1 billion, right? Mm-hmm. Worldwide. And I wonder whether the lack of rewatchability of Wakanda Forever has played into that as well. That, you know, it's given the opportunity to Avatar to kind of take over the screens at Christmas.
Because, I mean, it certainly doesn't hurt. Yeah,
I liked the movie. There were a lot of things that I enjoyed about it. I felt like it was nice to be back in a room with the grown ups. I do think it's a step down, action aside, from the first movie, and it certainly hasn't stuck. You know, I don't have the same amount of free time I had as I did when the first movie came out, but I wasn't devastated. I didn't have the time to go see it again at the cinema, or you know, I'm not going to be rushing to rewatch it. But I did think there were a lot of things that it got right. I think Namor, it got really right, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of him in the MCU. I thought the underwater stuff was all great. I thought Shuri made sense as the new Black Panther, even if I don't think that Letitia Wright is the presence at the center of the film that Chadwick Boseman was. Loved the Michael B. Jordan cameo. You know, there's lots of stuff that I liked about it. But like by a hair, it is my number two film of the year.
Yeah, I mean, your number one is Batman, right, Joe? Not to spoil it, but
yes,
right. So, and I think, I think Panther and Batman, Panther's up by a hair. I think if that middle hour was like 40 minutes, probably it's number one. You know, there's just that bit in the middle where you kind of go, maybe I'll pause it and watch the second half tomorrow. Some context. We'll get to the Batman. But yeah, I know. I think I just connected emotionally with the core story more than you guys, and so that was what popped it. You know, I was moved by this one.
What do you mean by the core story? Sorry,
you know, specifically Shuri grieving her brother. You know, I know the movie as a whole is a movie about grief, but. You know, and all the characters are grieving, but just her journey, you know, her sort of her hero's journey, if you will, you know, as she takes the mantle of Black Panther and in parallel grieves her brother. I just found it really affecting. In a way I can't really, you know, I don't think there's a lot of sort of thinking about it. It's more how I felt watching it. I know, and I liked all the other stuff you're talking about, all of the sort of surfacey stuff. I liked all that as well, but I was crying at the end of both viewings for me. You know, when she's on the beach at the end, I just found it really emotional, and that's what, you know, the Batman. I fucking love the vibe, and I love all of some of those sequences are amazing. Yes, that's a more novel. That's got more novelty to it than Black Panther, and that part of that is just because it's, you know, Wakanda Forever is the sequel to the first one, which had all the novelty. But I don't, you know, I'm not moved by the end of the Batman when Catwoman and Batman drive away from each other. I'm actually not that even interested in any particular emotional dynamic in the movie. Whereas Black Panther, I completely was. I just felt really invested in that family. In a way, more than the first movie, I preferred it to the first one, and I found it more affecting. And sometimes, you know, when you're ranking movies or thinking about what you liked about films, and you know, you can obviously we all think a lot about this stuff, overthink it, but sometimes you just go, hey, that one made me cry, and so that's that. You know, end of story. And that's how I felt about Black Panther this year.
But that's very fair. So let's talk about the Batman, which is James and I's number one. Like I say, for me by a hair, and I will put this caveat in there. The Batman comes out as number one for me this year as a 3.5-star movie.
Wow.
Yeah. I like it. You know, maybe on a rewatch it would edge up to 4 stars. I think it's flawed. It's very morose. The kind of the clues and the riddles, I think, could be a bit more sophisticated, or Bruce Wayne.
I think it's fair, a
little bit less thick.
It's fair that they spend a lot of the movie going like, "What the hell does this mean?" Because the clues are so bad.
A lot of rudder. And then Jeffrey Wright's just real Chris growl and a lot of thumb drive. Batman, thumb drive. It's gonna be a cough doing it.
I just, you know, I keep thinking back to whenever I think of those clues, I think of the Adam West sequence in the Batman 66 movie where it's good. The cat woman, a cat. What do cats have? 9 lives. What else do we know about the number 9? It's 3-squared. the whole rat with wings nonsense was bad, I thought. But I thought Pattinson was great. I at least admired its like commitment to tone. and just really, really hitting that. I liked the John Turturro part of the movie. I liked the CD nightclub. I thought Kravitz and Pattinson had chemistry, which was important. I thought Colin Farrell was good. I still think the casting's slightly weird, but I liked him in it. And yeah, I think I it just edged it for me at the end. I thought, like, I liked it and Black Panther. I think probably if you said to me, you know, you can rewatch one of those movies tonight, I'd probably go for the Batman.
Yeah, oh God, the first 10 minutes are just, that's one of those movies that just takes you by the throat. And in, you know, in a way, it's all about 2 hours 40, and it's sort of, it probably has to do that. But God, from the opening sequence into the monologue with his in writing and the, oh, it's just, I've probably watched the first hour of that 5 times this year. And I don't mean that as a bad thing. It's just that my interest fizzles a little bit after that hour, but oh, it's just a really, really good, it's a really good first hour. And then I think it ends well as well. That sequence on the bridge is cool. And it's just vibes. It's just a real vibesy movie. Again, it doesn't really feel like any of the other movies on this list. It feels really thought through. And I know I've already talked about this, but I feel like if you want to talk about cultural, you know, I feel like it's a movie that gets referenced in podcasts I listen to, and it pops on Twitter. It feels like it's having some staying power, which again, you wouldn't have thought for another fucking Batman reboot in 2022. It was just so hard to like, hey, people will kind of, you know, will vibe with it and we'll remember it and we'll be, you know, I think the anticipation for the sequel, I think the sequel is going to be huge, actually. I just feel like it's, people dig it. When my sister goes, oh, the Batman, I love that movie, and I'm like, oh, okay, interesting. Now that's just, you know, she's not there with any of the MCU stuff, and she watches them, but this one I just feel like it's interested people and continues to.
I don't know. I find it really difficult because Batman's inherently cool, you know, like I still do think there are some things the movie does badly or gets wrong. Like, I don't think the car chase is really successful.
That's one of the few car chases that I actually enjoy in films.
Fuck that, Joe.
I usually switch off as soon as the car starts.
I don't know what the fuck's going on. Where are we?
Who cares?
It's fine.
Anyway, yes, if you said to me, what do I want to watch of this year's movies, I'd probably go for the Batman. If you said to me, would you like to watch a Batman movie now, I'd go, yes. And this would maybe be, I don't know, like 4th, 5th, 6th on the list.
See, this is probably definitely my top film of the year. Probably my top Batman film. Like this.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
This feels to me, this is like, I consider this a 5-star movie because I think it nails the tone and the character that I want to see out of Batman. Like this feels as close to comics Batman as we've ever had.
Wow. And
that's something that matters a lot to me.
That's fair. Maybe they could get some better riddles next time or better.
It'll be jokes next time. They'll have mediocre jokes instead.
It won't be the Joker.
It'll be icicles.
Ice, yeah.
I wonder if they'll follow up on that Joker.
Yeah, they will. Well, Barry Keoghan's going to win an Oscar, so you know. Yeah, I mean, not this year necessarily, but he's a star. So yeah, hell yeah.
I think especially. I do wonder how well that has been received internally, given that they cut the Joker's big scene. I wonder whether this would be your opportunity to do a 3 Jokers thing.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was last year's movies ranked. So, you know, we're broad consensus. If a little bit of disagreement along the way, let's talk about the Disney Plus series. So again, we thought we were getting 7 at the start of the year. I think we lost Ironheart, maybe, that we were predicting for this year, and What If Season 2. Which were just, you know, dates were confirmed back then. So what we ended up getting was Werewolf by Night, Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special, Moon Knight, Ms. Marvel, and She-Hulk. And that actually, James, is the order that you predicted you were going to enjoy them this year. Werewolf by Night ended up 7th on both our lists in terms of anticipation because I'd forgotten it was coming out and hadn't put it on the document. And then you had to remind me mid-podcast. We're going to go 5-1 here. Same order. Reese, what was your 5th most enjoyable Disney Plus show this year?
It's another poopy one. It's She-Hulk.
Oh, wow. So Reese has She-Hulk down at 5. James, what's your number 5?
Moon Knight.
Wow. Okay. My number 5, by virtue of still having not seen it, is Werewolf by Night.
Ah, come on.
So I will get around to it eventually. Number 4 as my daughter calls him, Uncle Reesey Pants.
The Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special.
James, number 4.
Ms. Marvel.
Okay. Wow.
You absolutely get in the bin! Get in the bin for that. No. Oh my goodness gracious me.
Oh, we've got a lot more variants on this list. My number 4 is the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special. No consensus as of yet. Number 3, Reese.
Moon Knight.
Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special.
Right, we can talk about something. So all the way up at 3 for James. I sense this might be more about your dislike for the other two rather than your like for this. But tell us, how did the Guardians Holiday Special scale the heights of number 3?
The thing is, right, when Marvel announced they were doing TV shows, this is the sort of thing I expected, which is the full cast of the movie, broadly, on the sets from the movie, doing... smaller story that wouldn't necessarily be right for a film. Okay. And unlike you guys, I really enjoyed the kind of Mantis Drax combo. So I think that goes a long way to making me enjoy it as well. But I watched this twice and had a good time both
times.
You
watched it twice?
Yeah, just because I watched it so far before Christmas. I thought, I'll stick it on again. And yeah, I liked it. I liked it both times.
Twice. God, Reese, you watched it twice.
No, I mean, I didn't really watch it once. Even it was on, and I was looking at the screen the whole time, and I was listening to the sounds. But I don't feel like I watched it. If that makes sense.
Maybe if you'd paid attention, you would have enjoyed it more.
Okay, listen, get out of my goddamn life. In my head, I would go, oh, this year, good year for TV, bad year for movies, superhero shit. But actually, making these lists, I'm realizing that this TV, I mean, these are such stinky TV for me. That, you know, so actually, I've got Sandman in here higher up. Well, I know we're not doing Sandman, but that was good. But, I mean, yeah, 2 through 5 are all sort of crap, basically. So. I mean, my number one, I kind of loved, but the others, I just think this was a year that where we learned that Disney Plus MCU has failed, and next year's going to have to be a real swoop around. But yeah, the Guardians of the Galaxy, it kind of was exactly what I thought it was going to be, and it's dipped my anticipation for the actual third movie, and it's that laziness, it's just that whiff of it's just that first draft smell.
Yeah, it felt when you say James like story on the set from the movie. It was like, yeah, one location, green screen, and then hijinks with Drax and Mantis and Kevin Bacon. That bit was the whiff for me. The stuff that actually worked was the brief interactions between Mantis and Peter. I actually thought that Chris Pratt was one of the better things about this special. I didn't like the music. The animation was...
The music and the animation, I think, are the things that drag it down for me. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine ever rewatching this. It just felt so disposable in a way that I feel is dangerous for the MCU. Like
Wow.
This felt dangerous to me.
Because the MCU, like, it's for so long, it's felt like I kind of do need to watch everything. And like, you know, you watch something like this and go, maybe I don't.
Yes, yes. Once that bubble is popped, it doesn't get rebuilt. You know, I remember that with
the Guardians Holiday Special is the reason I haven't got around to Werewolf by Night yet.
Ooh,
yeah, interesting. James, I don't, you know, it's what they say about comic books too, right? That when you know you have there are buyers that buy the whole line.
Mm-hmm.
And then a line grows if it's a new line, and then there are crossovers that get popped into it, and then that reader stays. But there's that point where they go, well, you know, that's the fourth string of book spin-off of this crossover. I'm not going to buy that.
Yeah.
And then the reality of I need to consume all of this is gone.
Yeah. Once you can't keep up with all of it, you feel like, oh, maybe I don't need to keep up with any of it. That definitely happens in comics.
Yeah, and I think to Joe's point, yes, it's, I mean, for lots of, and that, because also what's interesting is that's us saying that, you know, there will be tons of people who never really connected with it, but I think there'll be people who post the Infinity Saga, you know, that stayed for a bit, but they are disconnecting when it's with crap like this.
I just on that point, I think we're quite rare in being Marvel completists. Like, there are shitloads of people who don't go to every movie. And I think the people who didn't watch this will mostly be the people who don't even know that it exists. Like, I don't think anyone's skipping it because they think it's throwaway. And I don't think they're going to be substantially more disappointed with this than, say, Thor. If they did watch it.
I wasn't more disappointed with it than I was by Thor. That's true. I don't know. It just feels so disposable. It feels like a piece of content. And you know, when in the past defending this kind of stuff from being labeled content rather than, you know,
we had this exact discussion on the podcast last year.
Actually worthy of discussion. But yeah, this felt like content. Okay, so that was mine and Reese's number four. No, James, it was your number three, was it?
Yeah.
Okay, so my number three is Moon Knight. Have we all done Moon Knight?
Yeah, that was my least favorite.
My number three, Reese's number three, James is number six. Mm-hmm. Okay, here is why it's my number three. Steven!
Steven!
And also, Eddie! You're a loser, Eddie! let's go and raid some tombs, Eddie. You know, those were two things that I think with Moon Knight, I was on my toes with every episode. I think a lot of these shows that we're going to discuss in the next few spots, the variance of quality in episodes was huge. I thought. But there was one episode in here that was the most dull and terminal episode of the entire.
Fact that I don't know which one you're even talking about.
The one where they're going through the pyramid.
For me, the worst episode of this is the one where he's in the Dream Asylum. Like episode five, is it?
No, it's tough.
It was fun because you didn't know what was going on.
How was that any different from what the other five episodes?
And you had scenes with him chatting to Ethan Hawke, and then you're actually getting some two good actors working together, and you're delving into some of the characters' backstory.
Not interested.
There were moments in Moon Knight that I enjoyed. I can't remember what my take was going in on that accent and whether it was good or not. And ultimately, I'm still not sure whether he hit what he was going for, which was what did he say? It was like Russell Kane meets. He dropped some really weird references.
Yeah,
didn't
some
he?
Very obscure names, wasn't it?
But yeah, I just think Steven as a character worked. And out of all of these shows, if there was one element out of all of these shows that I would be happy to return to, it's Steven. And I know that's mad, but I really did enjoy him. And I enjoyed I enjoyed the Khonshu voice so much. I think I enjoyed recording the Moon Knight episodes of this podcast more because of that. And yeah, so it's number three for me. Not by a huge margin behind the top two. But there was some real bad in there, even if I did get to spend some time with Ethan Hawke and Oscar Isaac.
I just think moment to moment, Moon Knight was more dull than anything else I've, you know, seen or watched this entire year.
Anything?
I mean, it was like if Morbius was double the length.
Oh, it's better than Morbius.
The performance is better than Morbius, but the story and, you know, the actual moment to moment experience of it is just dull. Dull, yeah, and confusing.
I'd take Morbius over Moon Knight season one. Yes. I thought it, and it's, yeah, for me, it's just such disappointment. You know, if we were doing the, you know, anticipation ranks last year, this would definitely, I think this would have been number one for me easily.
It was number three for James and I.
Okay. Because I think you've got one of my favorite working actors really in Oscar Isaac. I mean, ever since like Llewyn Davis and The Most Fun at Year, I remember, I think those came out maybe within the same year, 18 months. So I just thought, oh, this guy is so compelling. And you have him. He's not, you know, he's not done much TV, right? Not really. He's not done a superhero movie.
Ghost stuff, hasn't it? When he has done it,
yeah. And Moon Knight is an interesting character, and you've got the parallel live stuff. You've got the Egyptian milieu that, you know, it felt like, ooh, this could be an interesting pocket of the universe as well. And then it's just a bit of a whiff again. You know, it felt like this, you know, this is one of those, this should have been a movie. It should have been a movie. Or it should have been...
Yeah.
You know, I think an Oscar Isaac Moon Knight movie would have been so much better than this was.
Yeah. It did, there just wasn't the story there. You know, and I can't remember the name of the actress, but, you know, the sort of second lead, you know, more so than Ethan Hawke. She had more screen time. You know, I just thought that felt like, you know, you just wanted somebody better in that part. You just wanted someone who had a bit more of that X factor that Ethan Hawke and Oscar Isaac had. You wanted more of that conflict between Isaac and Hawke, you know, and it was so, by the end, it was so obfuscated through various gods and bodies. And, you know, you actually just wanted those two great actors to just go at each other. And you saw, you know, you barely got that. You know, and then I almost thought the worst part of it was the ending, because, you know, there was maybe some version of this where you went out with a bang and, you know, you killed the characters off, or you did something provocative, and actually to get that, you know, and you resolve that kind of question of who's the third guy in this, and then to get that as the mid credits or the final scene kind of cliffhanger thing taking you into a second season felt like such a kick in the nuts. You know, it felt like, oh, we've, you know, this. You know, you're keeping something interesting from a non-interesting show to make me watch the second one, and actually, it's just going to make me think less of this one and probably not watch the second one. Just yeah, a real big that this was my biggest my biggest disappointment, probably of all the movies and the shows. Maybe.
Wow. Okay. Moon Knight, so peaks at number three for us. Reese, what's your number two?
Werewolf by Night.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
James, number two?
She-Hulk.
My number two is She-Hulk as well. So let's talk about She-Hulk.
You've both got this wrong. And James, you've also got your bottom of the list. It's extremely wrong.
we'll get to that. Okay. She-Hulk at number two for me. For me, there's not much between my number two and number one, which are the, you know, your two number ones. And I think, you know, She-Hulk had some really bad episodes. I was convinced it was garbage halfway through. I think the back stretch of episodes did more than enough to win me round. I think the Tatiana Maslany performance, certainly in Gen form, was one of the most enjoyable things in the MCU this year. The Daredevil chemistry was off the chain. That was great. There were some really good one-line gags in there. It was half an hour long, which is good. It had Madison, which is good. There were some really rough patches. I'm not going to, because I don't have the time, but I wonder if I did go back and revisit that first four or five episodes, that I'd look back at them more favourably, given the last couple. Even if I don't think it fully stuck the landing, I thought there was more in the idea than there was in the execution of the finale. But, you know, in terms of at least this finale is doing something different, I thought it was more successful than Loki, which tried to do the same thing. And kind of did, I thought, kind of missed a lot more than She-Hulk did.
So I agree with a lot of that, in that I think, especially early on, I was worried that it was just incompetent. And by the end of it, I'd sort of came around to maybe it's not a sitcom. And if I stop thinking of it like a sitcom and just think of it as a sort of funny drama, then it works a lot better for me. Because Reese and I had a lot of complaints early on about how they were trying to use the sitcom structure, but not like setting up a cast or a premise or using those things. So once I shed those expectations, I found myself enjoying it a lot more.
I still do find that frustrating, that it never figured out.
Yeah, if it had really
supporting cast was.
Yeah, if it had really gone in hard on being like a kind of 30 Rock, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt sitcom.
But even just a functioning TV show, right? That, like,
it felt more like a TV show than most of these things, because most of them feel like movies that haven't got the budget to be a movie, whereas this felt like TV to me.
That scene at the end of the show where they're all sat around the table, Fast and Furious style, and you're like, who the fuck are these people?
Yeah, yeah.
were they on the show?
Yeah, I think its quality varied a lot, even within episodes. And that's why I couldn't put it top, even though I enjoyed Tatiana Maslany a lot, and I enjoyed all the cameos, and I enjoyed, you know, the general tone of it. Massively enjoyed all the Daredevil stuff, but even all that can't elevate it to the top for me.
Okay, so
proper failure across the board. Because it when you said it didn't function, someone said it doesn't function as a TV show. Yeah, yes, I agree, and that's it was so incompetent for me throughout. It felt like it was continuing to try to be a sitcom for every episode, and did not have the bones of what sitcom storytelling is. You know, some of this stuff we talked about it loads on our podcast, James. It's quite formulaic, you know, that, and that just is sitcom storytelling. It is formulaic. You need certain amount of characters, A plot, B plot. And I'm not, I know that, you know, some listeners might go, well, that's, I don't want to see that, you know, that sounds boring, or that's not, you know, that's not what I want. but it felt like the show was trying to be that and completely failing every single episode to be that, except for the finale, which felt like it could just say, oh, well, here's why the show was crap, because it, and we knew the whole time, guys. We knew the whole time.
The thing is, though, like,
so it almost, it rubbed it in your eye more. Like, it rubbed a viewer like me who thought it was crap for the finale to go, ha ha ha, no, but the, it, but us being crap was, it was part of the move, though. It was, the move was to be crap. Ha ha ha. Crap.
I don't think it was necessarily it's okay to be crap. I think they had just anticipated some of the complaints, which, in fairness, they did. I still think they made the show they wanted to, and I still think that the reason they didn't, like, they definitely didn't want to stick to a formula, although I think they should have, because, you know, sitcom formula exists for a reason. Like, I definitely agree that it was a mistake to not be formulaic, and I can't praise it for that.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is they were trying to do the formula, but without doing any of the work for that. If it was, yeah, if it set more of sort of a formula in the early episodes and then made more of a an effort to break it, well, then that's interesting. But it continued to come back to a formula it hadn't created.
Yeah, that's fair. It's fair. It's fair.
Do you know what? I just during this discussion, I think I'd rather go back and rewatch She-Hulk than any of these other shows. I'm bumping it up to number one, baby. Number one for She-Hulk.
No, absolute scum. You are a piece of shit. You are. Makes you mad all the time. Makes you angry and really cross.
So what was going to be my number one is now my number two.
No, we're going back in time. No, I'm going to do a She-Hulk finale-esque. I'm smashing the fourth wall. I'm cutting in. I'm jumping out of the box on your Overcast player. And I'm slipping down and I'm pressing the back 10 seconds button a few times.
What was your number one, Reese?
It was Ms. Marvel!
That's my new number two. okay, so where do we start? Do we start with why Reese loves it so much or why James hates it so much?
I don't hate it. I just
You had it dead bottom.
Did I have it dead bottom? No, it was second from bottom. Thank you very much.
Okay, sorry. What was it above?
Above Moon Knight.
Oh, I guess we should have talked about Werewolf by Night as well, shouldn't we?
No, well, we'll do that next because that's.
Oh, is that your number one? Oh yeah. Shit! Oh wow! Okay.
That is insane.
Okay. Well, so Reese, tell us why you love Ms. Marvel so much.
Because do you guys like superheroes?
Yeah, they're okay. Yeah,
they're okay. I like superheroes too a whole lot, and I like their origin stories. They're good. We've seen a lot of them, and so they can be boring and not as good. But when they're done well, they sing. You know, they can really sing. And I think this is a wonderfully done superhero origin story within a well-trodden genre of those, within an MCU that's done that many, many times, in a Disney Plus TV show landscape, which is just a lot of poopy, poop smelly stuff that's bad. And you just, this just had that combination of, you know, an excellent first episode that really got me on board. This, you know, the I can't remember it's the Batgirl guys, right? Directed the first episode. Anyway, you know, it was a very excitingly directed episode that set a style. You then had, you know, a well.
It was. I remember it now. It was the one they spent the budget on. Yeah.
Then you had a well-told origin story with a really lovely set of supporting characters.
And Reese, tell me about these supporting characters. Where do they go throughout the season? And I mean literally, where do they go?
There's that guy, and then they set up the school and the family, and then they go away for 2.5 episodes where they don't appear again.
I really like Ms. Marvel, right? And I'm poking fun here, Reese. because it was a toss up. I liked She-Hulk and I liked Ms. Marvel. Ultimately, I kind of liked Ms. Marvel kind of fairly evenly throughout the course of the season, and I liked She-Hulk more at its highs and less at its lows. It still seems wild to me that, you know, the promise of those first two and a half episodes, and then you go like,
and now we're going to spend 2.5 episodes with characters you don't even like and a bunch of replacement cast members.
It's not even that the Pakistan stuff is bad, because I don't think it is. The structure seems so odd to me that we go to, I think it's Karachi, right? And that we don't even, you know, her friends at home, what's his name? Hugo.
Hugo.
It's Bruno,
isn't
right?
That from Battle Angel?
Yes, yeah. That was the gag that I was reaching for. No one has been more Hugo since Hugo than Bruno. The best friend, the dad even, the brother, the love interest, like they're all gone. And we then pause for an episode to do a flashback that she isn't in. And I kind of get the ambition of wanting, you know, of what the show was trying to do and what it was trying to show us. And it clearly, you know, it had that partition storyline in it that it wanted to tell that story. And I completely understand the impetus of wanting to tell that story. Just really curious that you know, that structurally how they did it, I thought was odd. Although it did lend itself more to episodic television, because each episode felt like it had, you know, a thing that it was doing, and it didn't feel like, I'm sure Ms. Marvel could be a movie. This story they told in season one couldn't have just been a movie.
And for me, the thing that's gone unmentioned, which is the secret source of the show, is Iman Vellani as Kamala Khan.
Yes, she's great.
I think that is a star-making performance, and we'll see if her career, you know, goes in a kind of direction. But she carries you throughout. She carried me in her big purple arms throughout all the episodes, and that's what connects. That's what connects the disparate pieces of the show, is that she's giving a very, you know, a consistent performance throughout those episodes across a big spectrum of the story, telling a single arc for that character, and all the rest of it is swirling around her. So even though I liked all the supporting characters, yes, more so the ones in Jersey that you start with, you come back to at the end, and less so the Karachi characters, but I just found her so compelling that I was with the character for all of it.
Another pushback on it being, because again, I liked it. I don't think I thought it was, you know, quite the level you did. Both sets of villains are crap, right?
The clandestine were tedious.
The clandestine nothing-y. and damage control.
Yeah,
damage control.
Yeah.
Yes. Fair. Yeah. No, that's right. But it felt like the real villain or the antagonist is her. It's her coming to terms with her family history.
New York's the main character in the movie.
Eat my dick. I loved it. It for me, I take it over the Batman as my number two superhero thing of the year under Black Panther. Yes, I would. Yeah, loved it.
Strong praise.
I'm finding it hard to separate the movie and TV stuff, but I do. Yeah, I like She-Hulk and Ms. Marvel. You know, I think a chunk better than I liked the other stuff. And yeah, I think I've still got. I would have them around the like 3.5 star range.
5 stars.
Okay, James, you're number one.
This is crazy, James.
How is this crazy?
You've been smoking that werewolf weed.
Werewolf by Night, right? a one-off story with some fun surprises.
You've been hanging out with the man thing too much.
Interesting tone, like good. I want to say Whedon-esque writing. It's not quite Whedon-esque because, you know, no one gets threatened or abused during the course of it, but. I just thought, for something that I had zero expectations of, Michael Giacchino clearly came out and went, I am going to make as big a splash with this as possible. I just thought it was great fun.
Reese, why are you so... Like, if Ms. Marvel wasn't available for selection, would you be as outraged by this being number one? Where was it for you?
No, it was number two. No, I loved it.
Okay, so you really liked it.
Well, I think, to be fair, like, of the how many are we doing? We've done five, right? I mean, I put, like, Werewolf to She-Hulk, the sort of numbers, and I've said this already, numbers 2 through 5, all a bit of, you know, kind of within a hair of each other, and, you know, fairly poor. I'd put Sandman, I've already said it, but Sandman truly is my number two, which is a really good show that I like. That's my number two. But yes, Werewolf by Night is sort of by proxy my number two. I mean, yes, I liked it, but a bit content-y.
Nah, for me, it's the only thing of Disney's Marvel stuff which is flawless. Like, it's not, you know, it's not reaching for the same highs that Ms. Marvel does in terms of, you know, trying to convey big ideas and important themes and stuff. But, you know, if you go, okay, do us a kind of schlocky, you know, universal monster throwback horror thing in black and white and just make it fun for modern audiences, that's exactly what this is. And it gets every second right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna, because Joe hasn't seen it. I'm the dissenting voice, but it's my number two. I found it diverting. I could see myself watching it again if they announce sort of Man Thing, you know, a Man Thing like trilogy. I'd be like, I'll give Werewolf by Night Thing another watch.
Is Man Thing a big part of it?
He's a big guy. He's a big green guy.
He's massive. Yeah.
It's a physical role, yes.
It's just what I've heard, like that when people talk about the show, I feel like that's
most... Because it was a surprise, that's why. Like, yeah. Man-Thing is a fairly big Marvel character who we didn't know was in it until you actually watch it. And when he shows up, it's a fun surprise. Like, that's why people mention it.
I need to just slow us down 1 second and just have James... So to quote James, Man-Thing is a fairly big Marvel character. I do wish to push...
Go on.
A smidge. Well, he's just not a...
whose comic did Howard the Duck first appear in?
Howard the Duck is not a fairly big Marvel character.
Who was the first Marvel character to have a cinematic movie?
He's a weird... We're measuring this. Listen, the reason, Joe, that people talk about Man-Thing is because Man-Thing's awesome and he's in this and he doesn't say anything and he burns people and he touches them. And that's his power. He has one power. If you are freaked out by him and he touches you, you burn up. That's it. And he's a big green guy. He's cool. He's really cool. He's my best friend.
But how big is he?
Massive.
He's a big man. He's huge.
I mean,
he's
like, probably, in Marvel.
He's probably... as the Hulk. He's probably about as big as the Hulk.
Is it? What list is he on? Is he on the A list, the B list, the C list?
C or D.
Reese?
He's on the same list as Moon Knight, I'll tell you that much.
Well, absolute horseshit. He's at three lists on Moon Knight. he's on the same list as Steven is. I'd put him on the Steven list.
Oh, it's really fun when you get to be on this podcast and people are arguing about something you haven't seen. I might just do that next year. Can I stop watching it and just hear you guys duke it out?
We're not arguing. I liked it as well. I don't know what to say. Like, Gal Gadot Bernal as the Werewolf by Night was cool when he transforms and fights. That looks good. I liked Elsa Bloodstone as Laura Connelly. I think that she's fun. What's her face from The Thing being the villain and doing some scenery chewing was cool. It was diverting. It was fun.
Okay. James, you had expected to like them in the order of Guardians, Moon Knight, Ms. Marvel, She-Hulk. I had expected to like them in the order of Guardians, Moon Knight, She-Hulk, Ms. Marvel. And I'm still not sure out of those top two which way around I did enjoy them.
I just want to tag on the end of this. None of these are better than either Sandman or Wednesday, both of which are excellent. Netflix really smashed it this year.
Before we talked about this, you're not...
And they cancelled 1899, which is good on them.
You can't be horny on Maine. You can't be horny on Maine.
I'm not horny. I'm not horny for I'll talk about Wednesday anymore. Most of Sandman.
We can't. It's too dangerous, James.
Daniel Ortega is 21, so... don't send any. Don't send anyone round.
The show was filmed 6 years ago.
It's the confidence of a man who's Googled it.
Hey Siri, no, just ask for a friend. What was Jenny Ortega? For a friend.
Okay, so what I thought we would do is blast through our Cuppies categories and see if we can get any consensus on some of these. On some of these awards that we normally do, because, you know, basically that is the stuff that we've covered. Obviously, you can bring in Sandman. Do you want Wednesday to be eligible, James? It doesn't feel like it should be eligible. Feels like
it's based on a comic, but also yeah. I'm fine leaving.
Oh, right, mind you, I guess we had the Addams Family movie.
We did cover the Addams Family. Yeah.
Look, I'll let you keep it in. None of us.
Nice.
Reese, have you watched it?
No,
so we're not going to be joining you in votes. So you can mention it.
I've seen the dance. Is there an award for best TikTok dance? Because I think I know what I'd vote for on that, and it's man thing.
Okay, so best TV show. So what? I think based on our like agreement, what ended up closest? So does it end up being Werewolf by Night? Just because I haven't seen it, and you two had best, it quite no, high.
Best TV show has to be Sandman. It has to be.
Does it?
Totally agree.
Okay.
Yeah. Even though I put that under Ms. Marvel for my own list, I think that I'm absolutely fine with that.
Has it been? It's still not been renewed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, they have renewed.
They renewed more episodes, but they didn't call it season two.
Right.
And people are pissed.
Okay. Do a quick, like, 2 minutes on why The Sandman's so good.
Ambitious, varied, massive cast, all great. Some, like, just for a kind of look at the entire form of television, you get serial episodes, you get standalone stuff, you get period pieces, you get CGI, you get animation. Like, it's all in there. And everyone in it, with maybe the exception of Stephen Fry, is giving a fantastic performance.
Who's Stephen Fry?
It's just translated a very difficult comic so perfectly.
And who's Stephen Fry, James?
Stephen Fry is... He used to present QI.
Come on. Come on now.
Who does he play? Is that what you're asking? He plays Fiddler's Green.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
Do you feel more enlightened now? Yeah, that's what I knew was going to happen.
Well, do you think he was going to say he plays the Sandman? Like, what Sandman characters do you even know?
I read the first volume.
Okay, well, name another character from the first volume.
The creepy guy who kills people in the diner.
The Corinthian. That episode, the diner episode.
Lucifer.
Great. Lucifer is Gwendolyn Christie, who Death. I'm sure you would love.
Yes, yeah, I know loads of characters. I just don't know this Fiddling Green.
Go, Fiddler's Green. Go and watch it. Come back when you've seen it.
What volume's he in? What volume's he in the?
Like,
put the volume high when he's talking. Put the volume real down. You two, it's quiet.
Volume 2 or 3, I think.
Okay, I'll get to it eventually. Okay, so that is our best TV show. James, yeah, well, you reckon that in this list there is a Howard T. Duck Award for Best Bad Film. I can't wait to hear it, because we also need to decide on Worst Film. And I think there is one movie that is confidently the worst film. I can't think of any of these bad ones that I also had a good time watching.
So I'd have given it to Black Adam.
I'd have given it to Morbius?
I didn't have a good time watching Morbius. For best bad film. Best.
Hey, I gave the same rating as The Batman on Letterboxd. You reminded me of that, Joe.
Jesus Christ.
Best bad film for me is Black Adam, just because I spent the entire film cackling at how stupid it was. And
I'm happy to go with James on that, so I'm happy with that choice also.
I think,
and also the JSA as well. The JSA is an entire team of Howard the Ducks. Pierce Brosnan absolutely mugging for the camera the entire damn time. It's a great, great performance.
I feel like I need
totally insane.
Stand up for the legacy of my boy Howard here. but okay, Black Adam is the Howard T. Duck Award winner this year. Worst film is Morbius, right? Are we agreed?
I'm sort of convinced by Reese's Love and Thunder, but no, I think Morbius. I think Morbius. Love and Thunder at least tells a competent story.
Does it? Oh, Thor, Love and Thunder made me pissed. He did the
Thor theme on Thor. That's cruel.
It was so disappointing. I mean, everyone thought Morbius was going to be crap, and it was. People thought people were excited for that movie. It was going to be the gore movie. It was going to be the Jane Foster movie. It was Taika's follow up to Ragnarok. It was, it should have been good, and it was so bad. And it wasn't. It maybe wasn't as bad as Morbius, even though I liked Morbius. I get the same ratings as that one on that talk. But no, it just was so crushingly. Unless there's a, is there an award for most disappointing?
No.
This is the thing. I think Reese makes such a passionate and correct assessment.
And it is my least favorite MCU movie. I don't have it like a huge amount ahead of Morbius. I would be happy to sign off on it as worst film.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so our worst film is Thor: Love and Thunder. Our next category is best casting / best debut.
The Batman.
Best. Iman Vellani as Ms. Marvel, best casting.
The ensemble in The Batman is unimpeachable.
Oh, I think there's that middle hour which is all about the ensemble that, yeah, I know, I don't know, I'm not, I mean, I love, I really, really like the movie, but for me it's a vibes movie, it's not so, sort of...
I'm with Reese on this. I like a lot of the individual pieces. I think there's a solid few of those characters in there that aren't going to persist. For me, scanning down this list, I think the casting, you could make a case for Tatiana Maslany, but I could see that I think I would have Iman Vellani ahead of her.
Make a case for Namor.
Yeah, I was going to say it's Tenochtitlan, right? Is the Black Panther one? Looking down the list, I can't really see anyone else that is standing out there. So I think I'd be willing to co-sign on Iman Vellani just because, yeah, she did feel like an out of the box slam dunk.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fair. Okay. Also, the supporting cast, her family, are really good as well.
I really liked the supporting cast of Ms. Marvel. Although I think one of them might.
Yeah, I'm a red dagger stan. I got my red dagger tattoo last week. Do you guys see a red dagger tattoo? It's a red dagger. Who'd have thought?
Best song / best score. Best music.
That's my vote.
Were there any songs in the movies this year?
Yes. Moon in the way. Bow, bow, bow. That one from
Guardians of the Galaxy has multiple songs.
Oh, God, yeah. No, none of them.
I think it's the Batman times two score. And
Batman
song.
Score.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Okay, so best song / best music goes to The Batman. Best new film, what were we arguing over?
Well, I think it's The Batman.
And this
it?
Just we becomes can... best film this year because we didn't cover anything old. So
well, we did cover Punisher Warzone and Barbarella / Barbarella.
Okay, so
it's Barbarella.
Is Unless... Barbarella better than The Batman is the question I have to answer.
That's a real good question.
Both five-star movies, as far as I'm concerned. Though I think time has been kinder to Barbarella than it will be to The Batman.
Again, if I was going to rewatch one of them right now, I think I would rewatch Barbarella.
No, come on.
So do we give best new film to The Batman and best film to
no, yes.
best
yeah.
film to
Barbarella? I'm happy with that. I love Barbarella, yeah.
No. Reese?
It's a classic for a reason.
I didn't like Barbarella that much when we did the show, but if you guys really did, then
I like Barbarella.
I feel like I've won quite a lot of these arguments we've had so far on this, so I'm happy.
That's
an absolute crazy decision. A crazy decision.
It's fairly damning that every year we give best movie to something which is not very superhero-y. We're like, yeah, The Matrix, Ghost World.
We should do a film. We should do like A Knight of the Prince Charles, which is the cinematic universe.
Best film. Superhero films.
Oh, yeah. The Matrix and Barbarella. Huh. Okay. Interesting.
No, we had the classic year where we were arguing between Infinity War, Black Panther, and Into the Spider-Verse, which, you know.
Didn't Infinity War win?
Yeah, I think so. Animals. Okay, best costume? Does anyone have a good costume?
Yeah, I've got one.
Sure as hell ain't She-Hulk.
It sure as hell is Man-Thing. Costume. It's a good costume, James.
I mean, Man-Thing's design is good. I'm not sure it counts as a costume.
Is this just one that you don't overthink? Like, looking at all these projects here, the Black Panther costumes are still really, really good, and the Namor costume is cool, and the different looks that they have throughout that movie, the funeral stuff,
But is it best single costume or is it best costuming?
It can be either.
Yeah, well, if the latter, yes, I think Black Panther. The former, I really do think it's Man-Thing. I really do think that's my
thing. Is it a physical costume or is it CGI?
I don't think there's a physical performance in that. I think it's full CGI.
It's a computer design and it looks cool. He's a big green guy. He's got red eyes.
It blurs the lines, doesn't it? Because most of those costumes seem to be CGI now anyway, right?
Moon Knight looked cool, I guess.
Yeah, Moon Knight's suit version.
What, the Mr. Knight one?
Yeah, Mr. Knight. I think that would be my favourite. And Moon Knight is cool. Yeah. I think Moon Knight gets it for me.
Okay, I would go Black Panther, so Reese, you can cast the deciding vote.
There
is Ms. Marvel as well, I guess.
She doesn't get
her proper costume until, yeah.
I think, Joe, if the award is best costume, it's Moon Knight. If the award is best costuming, it's Black Panther. So you tell me, what's the question?
We've always done best costume before.
Moon Knight, baby.
Okay, Moon Knight. Best couple. Hugo and or Cameron. Oh, I liked Cameron. Cameron
is what about? It's clearly Wednesday and Enid.
Okay. It's not. It could be considered a crime what you're saying, but you just need to be careful, all right?
I didn't create the ships. That is for the fans to do.
Hey, listen, Joe. Here's a crazy one. What do you think of this? Is it Ace and Superdog? They kind of have a fun.
Which one's Ace?
The Kevin Hart, Bat-Hound. No, is it those two?
No, it's not. It's definitely not.
No, God, it's Batman and Catwoman.
Yeah,
right?
It is, right? I'm just looking.
I mean, that is definitely the funniest.
No, it's She-Hulk and Daredevil.
Oh, of course.
Fair.
Yeah? Did we get there eventually?
Yeah, I mean, geez, how it couldn't have been anything else.
And it led to the Hulk smash joke, which was honestly one of the highlights.
And it has upset so many people on the internet. People who should be upset.
Yeah, okay, so She-Hulk and Daredevil. Actual fucking in the MCU.
Yeah, finally. Not in a sandpit as well, like in Eternals.
Best villain. Did we get any good villains this year? Matt Smith? Christian Bale. We've got.
I did like Christian Bale as Gore.
Paul Dano. How good do we think the Riddler was?
No.
Mm.
Well, it's Namor, isn't it?
Is it Namor? Is anyone better than Namor, or is it? You could make an argument for Scarlet Witch. I wouldn't, but
no. I think Namor. Namor's the one I want to see back most.
Or is it Thulis in Sandman, James?
I did consider that.
Right.
Yeah. I think even the Corinthian is as much fun. Like, Sandman's too much of an ensemble. I think if you're going to say to me, which one of these villains do you want to see back again? I'd be like, well, show me more of Namor.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I will just make a brief comment to say that Man-Thing is the antagonist of Werewolf by Night. So throw that in there. You know, they are sort of trying to take him down and it's, you know, that is a major performance of the year. No, not really. Ethan Hawke. We can talk. Ethan Hawke could have been in the mix, but you know that show was smelly poo. So no.
Okay. So we've gone for Namor.
Yes.
It's bad news for Black Adam, isn't it? The supervillain with his own movie.
Yeah.
No. Who was the villain in the end? That
in Black Adam?
Yeah.
Time.
Do we need to circle back to Best Couple and talk about Mark and Steven?
No.
Okay. She-Hulk and Daredevil. Is that
Best Hero? Steven! I think I'm just working on my children.
I think it's Ms. For me, it's Ms. Marvel. For me, it's Ms. I think that's. There's a case for Batman, but it's
Thor.
She-Hulk for me.
She-Hulk for James. Batman.
It's got to be Ms.
If I can't, are we sure no one else wants Steven? He was the hero of that series. He was, though.
Was he?
Yeah.
He was more sort of swept along by it.
No. You are so in love with doing that impression. You just love that little impression that you have.
I like doing Khonshu more than I like doing Steven.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, but your Khonshu is just your Venom.
What? What are you doing? No, that any similarities are purely
accidental.
I don't sound like Venom, Eddie. I don't know why you keep saying Eddie.
Yeah, why does he keep calling him Eddie? Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go with Ms. Marvel.
Yes!
She was nice, I liked
it. It's a win for the incels.
Wait,
what?
Hold on, you're calling us incels? Don't have two children. You have to only get that by doing sex.
Where is children, Reese?
I've zero children, so I mean, you could put me in the incel bucket.
Hey, but there you go.
He's got two of them.
I do. Best screenplay.
All of Sandman.
Yeah, I guess you can turn this into best writing if the two include the TV
again.
Stuff.
All of Sandman.
Yeah, I'm with James actually, because I'm looking at the top of my movies list and the Batman is vibes. It's not. I don't think that's a particularly interesting screenplay. And Black Panther, yeah, for me that's about emotion and it's the performances and the direction and I think it feels like a screenplay that was could have done with another year in the hopper. But yeah, Sandman feels, Sandman. Yeah, I'm on board with that.
Okay. I can't argue with that. So, so that's the Sandman for best writing, I guess. Best director.
You.
Matt Reeves.
Yeah, I think I would go with that.
So it's a singular vision.
Yeah. And to have had a vision for Batman in fucking 2022... feels different and singular. I just think it's so impressive. It just felt like an impossible, he was going to fail at that. But it feels different, mm-hmm. I am vengeance and all that stuff. And I don't know if there's, I don't know if you guys, there's a score that's written. Bah, 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 bah. It's great.
I think a special shout out to those guys who did the premiere of Ms. Marvel, which was good, was well directed, was nice.
Also, I think they need, if we can give them like a true silver medal, because they did have a film that they made, it got put into the bin this year.
Yeah.
And so something nice for the guys, that would be, that feels nice.
They got a runner-up copy.
But we will print something physical. For Adil and Bilal, we will make something for you and I will send it to your house. Please send me your address.
A silver cup.
Send you a screenplay. Behind me from his mom's season 2.
Best supporting actress. I've got one for you. Her name is
Madison.
Patty Guggenheim.
Who does she play?
I suppose Madison.
Yay!
Yeah, I mean, definitely the character you want to see back, right?
John Coates.
Let's be serious, Angela
Bassett.
I was being serious. I thought she was great. But yeah, Angela Bassett, Zoe Kravitz. Who else? I did think Lupita Nyong'o is very good in Wakanda Forever as well.
Death in Sandman, perhaps, James? Kirby, or
Baptiste? Kirby. How Baptiste?
Yeah.
And I will say as well, because I do think this is a supporting... It's part supporting, part lead, I think. I think Elizabeth Olsen is good. I think she does a good job with what she's asked to do in Doctor Strange. I don't think... It's not as good because she's not got as much going on as she did in WandaVision, but I don't think you can fault what she turned in based on what they gave her. She's, you know, she's genuinely
terrifying, I think. Elevating the material that much, though, right?
I just think
she's not owning the screen in the same way that Angela Bassett is whenever she's talking in Black Panther.
I think she's doing okay. Very good. But... I think Angela Bassett's good as well, but yeah,
When Angela Bassett, spoilers, exits that movie, I was like, oh, I was hoping she was going to be the lead. Like, I didn't want that to end because I was enjoying it so much.
Yeah.
She was magnetic, I thought.
I genuinely would be happy with either Madison or Bassett.
Right, I'm going Patty Guggenheim.
Angela Bassett.
I tell you what, because I dislike She-Hulk so much, it would be a bit disingenuous. And Black Panther was my favourite at any of these things. It would be fucking disingenuous if I said Patty Guggenheim. So yes, Angela Bassett, yes.
Coward. Best supporting actor.
Is it Man Thing? I'm just wondering.
Matt Smith again?
No, Matt Smith is a most acting, not a best acting.
Who in the Batman? Oh, I tell you who I loved in the Batman. Peter Sarsgaard, I thought, was fantastic. He was my favourite supporting cast member in that.
You are both, of course, forgetting that John Krasinski made an iconic turn in one of those as I was on set for 2 hours on a green screen. I didn't interact with anybody.
Oh, I thought you were talking about his Superman.
In DC Street Pets, yes. I was not.
There is some fun voice performances in there. There's Maron's fun. Keanu Reeves is Batman. He's quite fun.
Winston Duke is really good.
Duke is really good. Yeah, Pierce Brosnan in Black Adam.
I enjoyed Bronholm, but it's very, you know, it's in his sleep. Like, here is a serious man in a bad movie, right? That's what Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, here's a serious actor in a movie filled with cartoons,
surrounded by bad acting. Yeah, I think Winston Duke's a very good shout. Who did you say after that, Rhys?
David Thewlis in Sandman.
Yeah, that's tough to beat for me.
I think the problem though with that is that he's not in, you know, he's
yeah,
just
he's
not
only
in
about half of it.
That is a supporting performance.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like he's sort of a wrong one. It doesn't feel like he's supporting.
Madison was in one episode.
But she didn't get the vote.
She got my vote.
David Tunis was really good. But also we know he's good. He's doing, and he's, you know, is he really doing something particularly different? He's just really good, David Thewlis.
Anyone else in the Batman set? It's you. Turturro is really good, right?
Well, Farrell, you know, Jeffrey Wright doing his thing.
No fellow lover Sarsgaard. Sarsgaard's really good in that. Underrated actor.
It's tough. No, Charlie Cox and She-Hulk. That's my official choice.
Oh, no, James, come on.
I can't pick anyone else. I can't.
Well, I'll go Winston Duke then. I'll throw the Dukester out.
I'm fine with Winston Duke. Yeah,
he's just it's just one of those performances that every single, and he was great in the first one.
He does add another note to it in this movie as well, which is fair.
Every single sec, every frame of the movie he's in, he like
not,
sort of on.
Not saying not Poeta. Would you? Is Winston Duke your favourite?
Yeah, I think he adds more to what he's given to the movie than Namor does. I think.
Yeah.
But I guess there's no novel. There's less novelty because Namor's new. But for me, Winston Duke. Yes.
Okay. Best actress. So I guess here we've got Iman Vellani and Tatiana Maslany on the Disney Plus stuff. I think you could definitely make a case that Natalie Portman and Zoe Kravitz are leads.
I think this one is between, and I think I know. I'm about to lay out in a Dr. Fate style what's about to happen. We will consent to you that it's between.
So it's going to be derivative.
It's going to be between Letitia Wright and Tatiana Maslany, and you two will pick Tatiana Maslany, and I will pick Letitia Wright, but she will get the pick ultimately, and I'll be okay with it because I predicted it like Dr. Fate.
James, how's that? It sounds pretty dead on to me.
The thing is, neither of you guys have seen Wednesday, so.
No, don't you can't. You'll be put into some kind of a jail.
Genuinely, there's so much going on in that performance. Like from a fully non-horny perspective, it's a really good lead performance.
Listen, if it keeps She-Hulk out of these awards, I'll go Jenna Ortega. I'm happy with
Jenna,
that.
Jenna Ortega.
Jenna. Yeah. Okay, you know her name.
No, let's not. No. I'm not having it.
Yeah, you guys are going to get me sent to jail for legitimate critical opinions.
Listen, I have legitimate critical opinions on this podcast every week. And I am firmly in horny jail.
It's good. It's a performance that has pathos and comedy, and like she does it all while barely making an expression. It is very like.
Oh, wait, hang on now. Right, Reece,
do it. Reece, do it.
Letitia Wright is. If you're in tears at the end of that movie, she has to be a big part of that performance.
Yeah, but are you going to vote with me on that?
Over General Taker, that I have.
Come on.
And also, I just feel like we shouldn't make this official in writing with James. You know, we should keep it off the record.
The only true emotional moment I got out of any of these movies or shows is there's a scene in Wednesday where Thing gets stabbed and Wednesday is so sad about it that I was almost moved to tears.
I think, here's what I'd say. I think that as I was moved to tears while Letitia Wright at the end of Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, I think she gives an incredible performance. I felt so much emotion about her on that performance. I think James feels more about Jenna Ortega as Wednesday and lots of things. And so I wonder whether that does win out.
Right, now I need to appeal to James. What about Tatiana Maslany? She's really good. Iman Vellani.
We're just talking
over Iman Vellani.
They're both good performances, but they're Marvel performances. You don't feel anything from them, right?
Shit, what else have we got? I don't know. What else is in there that I can make?
I'm not budging on Jenna Ortega.
I'm happy with Jenna Ortega. I've seen the dance loads, Joe. To be fair, the dance is all over the TikTok, and I'm now.
Here's what I will say to you guys: go away and watch Wednesday, and next year at the awards, if you think I'm wrong, I will rescind it.
That don't give us homework while winning.
It's eight episodes. You watched more She-Hulk than that.
Yeah, because we pay, we get money.
Okay. Best actor. So who's eligible? We got Jared Leto, Chris Hemsworth.
You start with Jared Leto, do you?
We got Robert Pattinson. We got.
I think I know who this is going to.
We got The Rock. We got. Benedict Cumberbatch, we got Gael Garcia Bernal. I guess maybe we've got Dave Bautista. We've got Oscar Isaac, and that's about it. It's Oscar Isaac or it's Pattinson.
I think let's not give it to our Pats now because there's just going to be a lot more to that performance. I think a lot more, and it's this is a really great. You know, star and a standing star because it's fucking Batman. But whereas I feel like season two of Moon Knight is going to be way terribly worse. Even worse. So we're going to give him the award for this. Let's do it now because we are in for a
clip. But there's going to be another performance in the next one. He's going to play the crazy one as well. What's his name?
Jake Lloyd.
Yeah.
He's not Jake Lloyd. That's Anakin Skywalker. Clive Owen? Clive Owen?
No, it's Jake. It's Jake something, isn't it? This all seems so important 6 months ago.
You
I could have told you everything about
Oscar
Moonlight.
Isaac, he's a loser, Eddie.
Yeah, I think it's him.
It is Oscar Isaac, right? Oscar Isaac. Do we give it Oscar Isaac?
It's also Arpat's, you know, he's there's just a bit less there. He's got the mask to help. He's great, but Oscar Isaac, so much more of that show is just all, it's all on him. And I didn't like the show very much, but he's given it his all. And actually, if you're Oscar Isaac doing a fucking Moonlight Disney Plus show, I think you just don't need to give a shit, but he really does. And he puts in the hours. I think it's.
I think you can't fault the effort he put into transforming himself completely for that series. So yeah, fair.
Finally, a win for Stephen. and I think we've already agreed the best film is Barbarella, so we've nailed it. The only category that we have left to sort is the Hall of Fame, which currently has in it Nick Cage, Hayley Atwell, Sam Raimi, Hugh Jackman, Michael Keaton, Laurie Petty, Stan Lee, Vincent D'Onofrio, Heath Ledger, J.K. Simmons, Marcus and McFeely, Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Tilda Swinton, Wesley Snipes, Chadwick Boseman, Adam West and Burt Ward, Scarlett Johansson, Tobey Maguire, and we also put Seb in there as well. And we have got some... We're just going to throw out some names, right? Did you guys come up with any? I've got three. I think we can put like three in total, maybe. I think that feels like that's what we did last year. That feels like a nice number. Do you guys have anyone that you want to suggest? I've got a few.
Oh,
is Hemsworth in there?
No,
I feel like Hemsworth's got better to come.
We can't put him in after that.
Yeah, right. Unless we want to stop him making another one, which I don't think he was the bad thing about that movie.
Batista isn't.
No, but again, he's got the new Guardians next year.
I think I've only got one suggestion. Actually, I know you've got three, so I'll just say my one: Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
You know, I think this... What are his
screen credits? Like... Oh. Yeah, what's he got screen-wise that we should be considering? Like, I know he's a great writer.
I mean, he wrote the screenplay for Sandman.
Yes, but, like, we're talking Hall of Fame now. We're not just talking...
A
good thing that he's done...
He's a very it would be my argument, A, that Sandman is his masterwork. This is I haven't read the comics, but this I hear is a pretty...
Sandman, you could make a compelling argument for being the best comic that has ever been made.
Wow, yeah. It's an important comic, and I think Gaiman is an important comics writer, not just for Sandman, but in terms of his wider impact on comics.
Yeah,
this isn't House to Astonish. This is the far less listened to and adored Cinematic Universe podcast. And I don't know, Neil Gaiman, I think, like, aren't most of the adaptations of his work crap?
Yes.
Are they crap? Good Omens has a Good Omens.
And then of the adaptations of his work, which are actually comics and which are prose, and how many are actually, you know, what of his work is eligible for this, you know, for comic book movie and TV show Hall of Fame?
I mean, I think they're doing a 1602 episode of What If.
Season 2, that's the next year. Yeah, I think I feel like we've lost his argument.
I think
give me another good game and adaptation, and actually, you know, let's see more than one pretty well received season of The Sandman before we like immortalize him.
He has done so much for the genre and the medium of comics on which this is all predicated, and we're just kicking him out, are we?
Listen, Joe,
we're saying wait by the door a little bit longer, Neil. Joe's got some better nominees to put before you.
Here's my counterpoint. I looked at this list of fucking, I don't know, 13 projects, and I struggled to think of anybody. So if you've got three, listen, but go for, by all means, you know.
Mine are good. Mine are good. Are you ready?
Go for it.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay. One is a pure oversight that we has not made the Hall of Fame yet, and it's insane that he hasn't. Christopher Reeve should be in our Hall of Fame. I know he.
Are we sure he's not? Are we sure?
I don't think he is.
Okay.
So I think Christopher Reeve should be in there. If he's not, okay. I mean, maybe he is already. I don't know. But we should certainly dot I's and cross T's there. My second one is Colin Farrell, who you guys fucking love in The Batman. And tell you what, he's also one of the best comic book movie villains ever.
Bullseye.
His Bullseye is superb. And I tell you what, if they brought back Bullseye in the MCU, that version, he would be amazing. He would fit in flawlessly.
That is fair, yeah.
I don't know if he's done anything else, but those are the two that I've got. There's the two.
You're the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
I know.
Farrell.
Okay, he's not good enough as the Penguin to justify two bites of the cherry.
Are they still making... Is the TV show still happening?
In theory, yes. But...
Yeah. Okay. All right. My next one, I think I've got...
This third one,
I think I've yeah. got a bit more of a chance with. What about... Old Mickey G himself, Michael Giacchino.
That's fair. That's fair.
So, he's done all the Spider-Man scores. He did... Reese, what did he do this year?
Werewolf by Night?
No. What score did he do this year?
Did he do the Doctor Strange
the
score?
Batman score, you idiot.
Oh! Oh, shit. Man, he's got to do it. And obviously,
he was
at your wedding. He appreciated it. Yeah, and he gave me away down the aisle. That's huge.
Gave me away down the aisle. He did. So he did the Spider-Mans. He did Doctor Strange. He did the Batman. And this is a really crucial one. He did the Incredibles, which is a really good score. And he did the Marvel Overture.
Oh my God! Put his ass in. Yeah. Put his ass
Giacchino,
in.
Right? Slam dunk.
Yeah. Giacchino. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think it's Giacchino, it's Neil Gaiman.
No, I'm not. Wait, James, do you have anyone that you want to suggest?
I mean, not really. I did the same thing as Reese. I went down this list and went, you know, out of everyone, there's nothing here which really qualifies anyone. Sam Raimi is the only one, and he's already in there. So,
anyone in the
I think maybe we should put the Rock in there just for fun.
No.
He doubled up this year.
I'd rather put a Rock in there.
I'm happy with that, if that's a compromise. I'm happy to put a Rock in
there. But Reese, I need to clarify, it is the Rock from Everything Everywhere All at Once. Okay.
This is the timeline.
Here's what I'm going to say, right? What about we put in Christopher Reeve? He might be in there already, but we'll just in case he's not, we'll put him in.
Okay.
We'll put in Michael Giacchino. That's number two. Okay. Number three, listeners, come at us on Twitter. Who are we missing? And we'll put it to a listener vote. We'll put it out on that site that everyone's got no problems with and do a little vote on there and people can tell us who they want to put in the Cinematic Universe Hall of Fame that we're missing.
I like it.
Yeah?
But if we don't like the result, we don't have to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, same. Yeah, we'll be fair.
What if they say Elon Musk or some shit? I mean, he was in Iron Man 2.
He was in Iron Man 2, wasn't he?
Iron Man 2. And we'll put him on that. So we've got Neil Gaiman and Elon Musk as our first two slots.
Richard Branson.
Wait, what's he in?
What's he was in one?
He was in a Bond movie. He was in Casino Royale.
That's what I'm... No, he can't be. Okay, he's not listed.
What about Michael Stuhlbarg from Doctor Strange?
Get out of here. Get out of here. Get out of this room.
What about Benedict Wong?
Ooh.
Is it a bit soon? We got Patrick Stewart in there.
We haven't got Patrick Stewart in there.
Ah, get P. Stew in there.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm up. Yeah.
Okay, so what we'll say is, it's Michael Giacchino, it's Patrick Stewart, it might be Christopher Reeve. and we'll still, listeners, tweet us who you think we should be putting in the Cinematic Universe Hall of Fame. Ideally linked to, like, you know, stuff we've covered already. But yeah, okay. Patrick Stewart, Christopher Reeve, Michael Giacchino. Crushed it.
Hey everyone, that's it for the 2022 award show. But as I said at the start of the episode, you can find our look ahead to 2023 over on the Patreon. That's patreon.com/cinematicuniverse, where we'll also be releasing the usual weekly episodes for every Disney Plus Marvel show once they start airing. I think What If is next? What If Season 2? Whenever that starts. And we'll also be exclusively posting our review of Ant-Man 3 Quantumania in a couple of weeks. So yeah, I hope to see you over there. There's plenty of content to keep you going. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.